This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is Lana, and I hope you're enjoying your day, whether you're listening to this in your car, at work, or at home. Remember the controversial interview I did with Tim Murdoch in May titled The War on Whites? He's back. Well, I didn't think it would be so controversial because at Red Ice, there isn't anything we don't talk about. Truth fears no investigation, right? Well, in this conversation, Tim will discuss the managerial class and why the establishment fears true independent alt media, now resorting to the removal of certain programs on YouTube and iTunes. Why is the enemy so afraid to talk about politics concerning white European folk? Why is it so threatening to the establishment? We'll also talk about the difference between discussions and psychological warfare, and what the opposition might have in store next, since we're constantly upping the ante. Tim also tells why he simplifies things down to us versus them, painting the enemy with a broad brush. Later on, we discuss how Europeans don't have a morality that includes their own existence. He also brings up the important point that it's much easier to be anti than pro something. So get comfortable. Mr. Murdoch, my favorite basement-dwelling Nazi, how have you been?
I've been good. I've been fantastic.
So how is Dearborn, Michigan these days? Do you guys have Sharia law yet?
I don't know. I'm not in that part of the city. That's actually a good question. I don't think so. I know there's a couple schools in some parts of Dearborn, a couple schools that have a lot more challenges that never make the national media. I mean, the police are always called in there and stuff like that. But I am, you know, it's basically not, the major sections that migrated into Dearborn are out of Lebanon originally. And the recent migrations are a little bit different, but the formal migrations were during that wonderful intervention into Lebanon. And they blew up a lot of different houses there and everything else. So then they invited all these Lebanese refugees in here. And a great many of them are Shia. They're not Sunni. So there's a little bit of a difference there. A little more along the lines of the Persian and Hezbollah than they are around the traditional Sunni mix. And there's a big civil war between these two right now. But that is a whole nother bill of goods, actually. But it's kind of an interesting thing. A lot of them, in fact, the ones that I know from growing up would move back to Lebanon in a heartbeat. Some of them have built literally 5 and 6 houses and have had 5 and 6 different houses bombed or destroyed. Mm. So it's kind of a sad situation. And in some instances, you just have refugees that say they're Palestinians just to get in anywhere. They all say the same thing, you know. So it's part refugee scam and part like tragedy of our intervention continuously into the Middle East.
Sure. Yeah. You know? Yeah, it seems to our enemy of a government, they'd rather bend over backwards, I think, and facilitate new laws where Sharia laws, where citizens could be stoned for adultery or maybe have a limb amputated for theft before they would allow whites to peacefully separate into their own ethnic zone.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about that. But the I don't know any of the although I'm sure they're out there, but most of those ones out of Lebanon, generally, you know, in fact, the last conversation I had, you know, they're not religious at all these days. They just want to be left the hell alone. And if you've had 5 or 6 houses destroyed, you're probably not fond of the Zionist state of Israel. And you're certainly not going to be fond of Jews or even fond of the radicals on the other side of the equation. But the Shia are a totally different bill of goods than what you see on the more radical elements of the Sunni, generally speaking, but not always. When you start getting into the Shia crescent, which runs from Iran, it runs through, of course, Iraq, through Syria, and into Lebanon. And that's called the Shia Crescent. You see, the Shia only make up about 10% of the world's Muslims, or roughly somewhere around that, depending on who's giving you statistics. The Sunni dominate the numbers globally, but in the Middle East, they're now at 50-50, which is why everything's going on with Syria. It's one of the reasons the House of Saud is so concerned with Iran.
Yeah, I saw a video in Dearborn, Michigan, where there were a bunch of Muslims stoning Christians. Did you see that one?
No, I haven't seen that one, but I haven't heard of anything like that. That would be pretty radical for even those areas. But at the same time, you know, there are elements that have been let into Western civilization intentionally. especially into Europe, more so Europe than America, but in America and certain elements of New York where there's big populations, certain elements of Los Angeles, certain elements of Minnesota, and even Dearborn, Michigan, where there are very radical elements that have been, in my opinion, intentionally just they opened up the doors within the last 20 years, even post September 11th. You know, that's the angle the neocons running. If you have a huge crisis, you just make things worse to make things better. You know, their only way out is to really what they believe their way out is World War III. And when the West goes to boot out Muslims who really have no real power other than what you give them, they don't have air forces. They don't have navies. They don't have forward infantry formations or anything like that. All they have is people on the ground. And when they go to kick them out, well, then they can expand Greater Israel. That's one of the angles the neocons are running, which is the only angle they've had post September 11th. But that's my opinions on that are a whole nother bill of goods. But that's what they're trying. They keep on trying for these large wars. For some reason, that hasn't worked out so well. But now, of course, the main facilitator of stopping them, Vladimir Putin, Russia, and some of the elements in China. Now, of course, they're right on their doorsteps, quite literally. You know, last time they tried to go into Syria, of course, Putin put them down or put down the whole entire scenario and they blinked. Now, of course, they're right on his doorstep going into Syria again. And now the warnings are coming. So no one knows what's going to happen. Obviously, the trend towards some type of conflict, which is what they always want, some type of conflict, you know. But.
Well, I read the anti-white garbage Searchlight magazine, Rhett, where they mentioned you and they quote the mantras. And ultimately, I was thinking that this is highly beneficial to us because it gets the meme out there even further to people who might say, yeah, of course, diversity means less white people. And yeah, why is it that only white countries must diversify? It then clicks in their head. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anything is great. They forgot to include that I'm living in a basement and I'm a Nazi. But, you know. That which is kind of funny because I always, you know, expect them to include that. But I think they're trying to lay off that for the time being. But anyways, Searchlight is some of these elements connected to Searchlight. And they're a very big anti-white organization. You know, they're always stomping out Nazis. And Nazis are really anyone white walking down the street who happens to not accept the programming. If you accept the programming and bow your head, you're fine. But as soon as you speak up, you're a national socialist. You're a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. You're a white supremacist. It's all the code words they use, you know, racist. They don't use racist so much anymore, which is kind of interesting. So all they say over and over again is neo-Nazi and white supremacist, which is kind of funny. But they don't use the term racist so much, which is one of the funniest things as well as Tim Weiss, the famous anti-white, very well-paid, very respected anti-white, big money-making anti-white in North America. Who does all these university tours and everything, he actually wrote a whole entire piece on the mantra on the white genocide on Bob Whitaker. And he mentioned white genocide project, but he didn't call us racist once in the whole entire piece, which I thought was rather fascinating. Hmm. So we're basically potty training them slowly but surely.
Well, before we dive into the managerial class and why the establishment fears alt media, what did you think of the With Jews We Lose candidate Robert Ransdell in Kentucky running for U.S. Senate? Real or a plant?
Those that know him say it's real. He has a history of doing large publicity stunts. He has a history of doing large publicity stunt. Now, obviously, I don't think he thinks he's going to win Senate. He's not stupid. So he's doing some type of publicity stunt. I don't know enough about him to make any type of informed judgment. But those that I trust do say he's good at running large publicity stunts. And this is a pretty big one.
Oh, yeah.
This is a pretty big one. Very controversial. But some, you know, it's hard to tell these days. I don't know him personally, so I would have no idea. What's going on right now, and this is, you know, the trend has been, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, if we were talking about everything's going to be anti-Zionist, of course, most people would laugh. Now everything is anti-Zionist. In fact, now everything's anti-multicultural. Even the left, the so-called left of Europe, is talking about anti-multicultural. Anti-Islam is very big. 10, 15 years ago, that was taboo. Anti-Zionism is just huge globally. The next big trend to drop will be anti-Semitism, which comes in cycles. It comes in cycles, and there is no stopping it once it starts. So that's just a sign of the times. I follow Twitter, and a lot of people, you know, obviously I'm on Twitter. When I'm active somewhere on message, I'm usually on Twitter, not Facebook, because Facebook always bans me. But Twitter has never banned me, so we've basically been focusing on that type of social media using Twitter. And And one of the things I've noticed is, in fact, I just tweeted one, just a random one on the Jews. And this is something that's coming down the pipeline. It's going to be very aggressive, very overt. And it's just, it's, these things come in cycles. These things come in cycles.
So let's talk about this managerial class and why do they fear alt media?
Well, one of the challenges with this is, and this is stuff right in front of everyone's face. Everyone's talked about it, but not in a direct way. The management class, for those that are listening, is not what you think it is. The management class is an ephemeral concept. It's kind of exotic. It is the class in Western civilization that manages to get things done. It's most noticeable at the local grocery store. I always say in America, you know, the grocery stores, you can always tell if you go to the same grocery store all the time or the same market, you can always tell if someone's not there because, you know, you have expiration dates. You have things that can go bad pretty quickly. And usually it only takes a few people in any particular organization that are critical to getting things done, even a large organization. A lot of the rest are just kind of like loose ends. I'm not saying they're not hardworking or great people. They just don't manage to get everything done. There's going to be a handful of people, one or two maybe, at the local Piggly Wiggly in the South. They manage to get things done. And it's an ephemeral concept. And we know from the Soviet Union, and we know from other factors as well, but once the management class starts being turned on or starts being pissed off at the, whatever direction the country's going, whatever direction the organization's going, that organization or country is over with. Change is coming. And the elites have known about this for quite some time. It's one of the reasons one of the funny stories about White Rabbit Radio is we actually tried advertising, and the only one that would accept our advertising, Red Ice, of course, doesn't accept any advertising. You guys sell memberships and sell digital media. But many of your contemporaries, many of the contemporaries out there take advertising, mm-hmm. very expensive advertising, because they have a very big and good audience. Rents.com was the only one that would ever take our advertising. Others, some legitimately were just scared to death of it. And others were just like, there's no way we'd let you advertise on here. And the usual suspect, the most expensive suspect, said there's no way we'd let you advertise on here. We don't agree with you politically. And of course, the enemy has long known about alt news. They've long tried to anchor themselves within certain components of alt news. And you can see this over and over again, not by what they will talk about, but by what they won't talk about. Because some are afraid to talk about things, but some are absolutely, we will never talk about this. You know, mm-hmm. they're always steering clear of certain questions and certain issues that Red ISIS is now taking head on. White genocide being one of them.
Yeah, you know, it's, you were on the program back in May, and it was wild to see the reaction from many Red Ice listeners. It went two ways. They either got it or they really didn't. There was nothing in between. But those who do, they become highly dedicated with a fervor I've not seen in our people for a long time. It's this kind of a fervor that is unstoppable. And I know that this is why lately mainstream media has been so gung-ho attacking European preservationists, because we are now starting to become a threat, right?
Well, definitely. Once you have a target audience, then it becomes D-Day. We're talking to the management class right now. I'm talking to the class that manages to get things done across Western civilization. When they get pissed off, things are going to change. The Soviet Union was brought to its knees. The only thing they had to do in the Soviet Union, they didn't have to do magic bells and whistles. Well, in a way, they did. They did a complete magical act to this audience. Is really what they did was they exposed it. They brought awareness to the fact that you're living in a workers' paradise that murders people when they try to leave. That doesn't really make any sense. We're living in a country's Western civilization that forces diversity on down our throats and only our throats. It's just a complete anti-white genocidal scam. The only thing we have to do is bring awareness to it. Once people see it, they're like, wait a minute. Let's have a discussion here. That's all we're trying to do is get a discussion going, because we ain't worried about getting wrong. Worried about being wrong at all. The reaction to the interview was a lot broader than even you know, because of the theme, the particular title, and I didn't title it that. A lot of people think I titled it. I don't have anything to do with titling anything at Red Ice. It was all Lana Lakhtev. You titled it The War on Whites. And a month or two later, Mo Brooks down in Alabama talked about the War on Whites. Mm-hmm. Now, to some of the listeners, they would assume that's all accidental or that's all coincidence. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I can't prove, I don't think Mo Brooks would have heard it, but maybe one of his staff did. Because again, well, who are we talking to? We're talking to the management class. The Red Ice audience, the audience for alt news is huge. And they're very white. We know the facts behind the data behind them, this particular core audience. But they didn't assume that was accidental at all. They assumed you were seeding memes. It's kind of like, Media is always political. Any media outlet's considered political. It's just whether or not they take their politics seriously. So Red Ice is kind of like, you know, Red Ice Radio, Red Ice Creations, this giant white bull walking down the streets. And one morning you decide to walk down Anti-White Boulevard and just run over all the China shops. Well, someone's going to notice. And it's going to piss people off. And that's basically what happened. And then you got the crackdown from Apple. And I've had some interesting coincidences since then. I won't go into on air, but they got really upset. They got really upset. It's okay if Alex Jones avoids the issue, but if you take it head on, they're going to get upset. There's no doubt about that. They're going to respond. Because they're not considering it an accident that Mo Brooks said war on whites and it became a trending hashtag and you have a show title war on whites. There's no accidents in practical politics. If someone's seeding memes, they're seeding memes, which is kind of interesting. But that is one of the reasons for the crackdowns that have happened at Apple with you guys and various things like that. They're upset. They're not. The big knockdown dragout fight in alt news was between Alex Jones and Rents.com back in the day when Rents.com went overboard and became anti-Zionist, overt anti-Zionist. Since then, they've been trying to hold ground, and it's not working all that well. Because as soon as you tell a large number of whites that they can't discuss something, they're going to start discussing it. Because in America, we still actually have free speech. In Europe, they just throw you in jail. But here, it's not so easy.
Exactly. It should be obvious to people like, why did Apple censor this particular show and remove this radio show? What are they talking about? Maybe I should look
into it. Well, they didn't do
it
before you talked about war, but they did it after the Mo Brooks incident, because that's not coincidence to them. Now you take your politics seriously. You've staked a line in the sand that we will go and discuss anything, period. We're going to have discussion on whatever we feel like having a discussion on, and these are white issues. And, you know, I mean, and that's what we're here to do. I always tell people, even if you disagree with white genocide, I'm fine with that. Like Searchlight in the UK did. I'm fine with that. Write an article. Disagree on it. I'm not worried about being wrong, because we're living in a civilization where the people running things are always arguing a position that always puts us in a world without any white people. They've been doing it for a century. They're not doing it accidentally. This isn't some giant accident. This isn't some coincidence.
Let's discuss the difference between discussions and psychological warfare.
That's the big... This is what happens, and this was a funny process to watch. When you released the War on Whites, it came up on your giant Facebook page, Red Ice Creations Facebook page, or maybe it was Radio 314, or maybe both. And then, of course, things started, all hell started breaking loose, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
and the tendency is for people that like having discussions like me and you, and I was once in this road, to try to start to educate. And that's what a discussion is all about. To really educate, we have to have a discussion. To have a discussion, there can't be any presence of psychological warfare or psychological operations. If someone starts yelling names, they're not interested in the discussion. Mm-hmm. They're either, one, too programmed to have a discussion, or two, they're evil. They know what they're doing. Because the whole entire reason for names like racist, anti-Semite, white supremacist is to shut down discussion. Well, there's an agenda behind it. It's not accidental. It's an agenda. So as soon as someone starts calling names, I go into a totally different mode. I start calling names back. Names like anti-white, or you're speaking from the anti-white point of view, or yes, you just agree with the anti-white proposition. There can be no all-white countries anywhere, and there can be no all-white areas in the formerly all-white countries, which is where you get the hashtag white genocide. You know, I just start going down that particular road. If they start calling names, you got to start calling names. And it's like a rubber ball bouncing it off of them over and over again. Most people don't have that particular dispensation or don't want to engage in that type of thing, but someone has to do it. And when you were on there, of course, the swarm came in, which is Bug Swarm, is these guys online. That's all they do. They get in anti-white's faces and they start screaming back. There is no discussion in the presence of psychological warfare. When someone's calling you names, they're not interested in discussing you or letting you have your viewpoint, are interested in the type of conversation we're having here. They're going down a totally different road, which is unacceptable in a civil society, in my opinion. It has no place. If someone's trying to shut down a discussion by yelling names, because we're not yelling names.
No. Nope.
We didn't start it.
No. Nope. I just think it's interesting, too, that people take it to extremes all the time. It's if you're saying that you're concerned about your people and your race, all of a sudden they think that means you want to kill other races. I mean, what happens in people's head to make those kinds of leaps?
It's very simple. It's very simple. What we're doing is hitting on a very hot issue. And this is something that's a very big deal. And Europeans do not, white people do not have a morality that includes our own existence. And what you're doing is pinpricking at a core. We have very famous elements in alt news they cannot talk about their own self-interest without immediately universalizing it. They can't talk about anything just white. And this is even a huge problem. I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff that you just hear out of some elements that are very educated on alt news saying, well, if we don't let in the Mexicans, accept them, we're going to be Nazis. Well, that's a pretty tough proposition. Imagine, if you will, China tries to become non-Chinese. And in 1965, America was 90% European, white European. So China right now is 90% Han Chinese. Imagine one morning China tries to make itself non-Chinese without a vote, without a discussion, whatever. One morning on down the line, they said, well, you know, if we don't let in all these Mexicans, we're going to be Nazis, or make all these Mexicans Chinese. Of course, most of the listeners will laugh at this, but this is really what we expect. And that's not there's no wiggle room in that proposition. So you're doing the exact opposite of what you'd want to do in this particular process. But it comes down to the fact that whites do not have a morality that includes our own existence. Even in pro-white circles, you will see time and time again, very few, Only a small percentage, maybe only 20%, define themselves as pro-white. They're always in opposition to something, opposition to multiculturalism. Whites are in opposition to diversity. Some famous pro-whites are only in opposition to Jews or Zionism. They're not comfortable talking about white issues. This is now a moral crisis. When you talk about white genocide, what are we talking about? We're talking about our existence. And really, we're pinpricking something that goes back a long ways in Western civilization. And actually, the priorities of mine, yours truly, is to actually have a lot larger discussion about this. But this is why it's such a hot button issue. Because you have even, you know, I know famous Odinists, famous Germanic heathens and things like that, who are not, now they have a morality that includes their own existence, but they're still not comfortable. This goes back a long ways into the European psyche. And this is, a deep conversation. But anytime you hit on white genocide, what are we hitting on? We're hitting on the morality of our own existence, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
And it really starts making people uncomfortable, mm-hmm. really uncomfortable. And it's something that I have some, nothing has power over understanding, as they say, and it takes some amount of understanding. But that's why, you know, I understand people get uncomfortable. I understand people get upset. But generally, they're only comfortable, you know, these academics, if they've been around academia for any length of time, they are not comfortable talking about white interests at all. It always has to be, well, it's not white genocide, it's the genocide of everyone on this planet. Well, but that may be true. Maybe that's what the elites are going for, the outright genocide. But the only thing we can see right now is diversity is it's not being forced down the throat of Chinese or Japanese. That's mm-hmm. just, that's all. That's never going to happen. It's only in white countries, and it is all white countries. So this relationship revolves around our relationship with our elites that's holding the planet hostage. It's overt. It may be covert move against the planet. Who knows? But it's overt in the relationship between whites and their elites, Jews and Gentiles alike. And there's really no denying that. It's just the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say it's much easier to be anti than versus pro. And if you look at the forces that are working in European nations right now, it's very degenerate. It's all about a corrosive force. It's not building up. So they're just going to destroy, destroy, destroy. And then what?
Right. Well, I mean, and this is something we've observed over the years. You know, OK, now we can be anti-multiculturalism. And of course, I'd have friends to say, OK, who's going to be pro-white? Well, now we can be anti-Zionist. OK, who's going to be pro-white? And now we got the big one coming. Anti-Semitism, okay, who's going to be pro-white? But most of the famous pro-white elements that would otherwise be pro-white first and foremost are not comfortable. They're only comfortable in being in opposition to something. And this is, I'm not saying anything bad about them at all. This is something Europeans always have to go through. Anyone white will have to go through this. It's much more comfortable being in opposition to multiculturalism or immigration or Islam than it is talking about white genocide. For this very reason, you're dealing with the core problem. I mean, let's face it. You know, this is a discussion I got into before. We paint a very broad brush. I just say pro-white versus anti-white. I simplified. I put all the enemy in one corner and I let Odin separate them or Jesus. Jesus can pick and choose who's what, where, when, and how. Between the crazy, what's the latest? The Lutheran refugee charities that bring in all these non-whites in the Western civilization, or the Barbara Lerner Specter, the famous Jewish Zionist lady who, of course, is all the rage these days. And I know something about her because all you have to do is watch Anti-Racist Hitler and you'll see her quotes. But at the same time, you know, watching Red Ice, something that you guys have become aware of and more of your audience become aware of. We have centuries and centuries and thousands of years of dead whites buried around the planet, right?
Yep.
Kennewick Man, Canary Islands. We have a lot of mystery here. It's not recent. There are no Jews there. There are no Barbara Lerner Spectres. There are no Kodenhof Kalerges. There's no famous Zionists. They're just dead. We don't know why. We don't know if there's some larger cycle here. The way to provoke a larger discussion, of course, is by painting with a large brush and gearing for a larger discussion on what exactly is going on out there. Because in the Canary Islands, there are no Abe Foxmans and the ADL running around, but they're dead. We don't know what happened. So let's paint it with a wide brush and keep an open mind. At the same time, let's talk about anyone pushing white genocide and label them for what they are, anti-white genocidal freaks.
Yeah, I noticed too, we did a show recently on white slavery. This is history and it's suppressed. Yet when you get into it, people literally will post comments like, this show is racist, or, you know, blacks come in and they take offense to it. It's like, we're stealing their victim card. It's, you know, it's part of their identity. You can't have been slaves too.
Whites will never be seen as victims because we can blow up the universe. I mean, well, we could blow up the solar system. So white kids are victims. I don't see whites as victims because we can, in a very short period of time, change the whole conversation. That's not a victim. Victims have no power. So we have a great deal of power. They just have to choose to exercise it. But with that being said, that again, you're getting back to the core, white slavery, white genocide. You're talking to a group that even the most educated do not have a morality that includes our own existence. It's always in terms of universals, and it's not recent. This is a long time coming.
So what kind of psychological warfare do you think the other side is going to be pushing on people who do know this anti-white agenda?
They're already battening down the hatches of white genocide. It's coming down their avenue. That's inevitable. What they're doing, in my opinion, these crazy fools are actually going for something very large. We've seen, for instance, I'm sure you're aware, and many of the audience is aware, that you have tens of thousands, and heavens knows the actual number, of these poor kids out of South America that they're shipping on these God knows what type of trains through Mexico and everything else. You have tens of thousands of these kids that are here. And of course, no one knows what they're here for. Well, if you understand the anti-white proposition, you really understand white genocide, and you understand you have amazing predictive powers. You can stun your friends and neighbors with like a crystal ball. And it's very easy. There can be no all white countries anywhere, and there can be no all white areas in the formerly all white countries. And then you can reduce it down. There can be no all white police forces in the formerly all white areas or the formerly all white countries. There can be no all white universities in the formerly all white areas. You know, you get where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. And what they're getting ready to do, they're getting ready to pull the fig leaf off. They're getting ready to lower the boom on the last hurrah. And I thought it was interesting. And again, they've created the problem. The reaction is there. We don't know exactly how many tens of thousands, and it may be 100,000. We don't really know. It's a whole lot, though, of these kids that are here. And I thought it was interesting on Fox News that Charles Krauthammers, he's a famous neocon, famous Jewish neocon, and his buddy, another famous neocon of sorts, George Will, except he's one of the Anglo elites. He's the big Anglo media conservative titan, if you will, writes all these columns. He let it slip. And, you know, if it would have been Charles Krauthammer, this would have been picked up everywhere. But because it was George Will, everyone's concentrating on the devil they know and not the devil they don't know. The white anti-white traitor, which is a huge problem. In fact, that's our biggest problem because they enable everything else. Mm-hmm. And so what he said was what they're going to do, or basically what he's saying is what we need to do is ship them into every zip code in America and just divide them up and make sure families adopt them. There can be no all-white families in the formerly all-white areas of the formerly all-white countries. That's where they're going with this. In fact, just recently, just in the last 72 hours, I saw in the news reports coming out of Italy that in the EU, they're going to start paying different families. It's some trivial sum to take in, quote-unquote, immigrants and refugees and, you know, take care of them in their house and stuff like that. That's where they're going with this. It's going to be so overt that even the people that think white genocide is crazy are going to say, wait a minute, what are they doing here? But in the media, though, the Duck Dynasties and all these famous reality television shows, there's another one, too, that I can't think of the name of it, in the South. It's a Southern reality show of a very white family. But you're always dealing with mixed race adoption somewhere in there. So this is where they're going. And of course, Hollywood, very famous Hollywood celebrities, Madonna, whatnot, have always done this type of thing. Angelina Jolie. But this is where they're going. They're going to go very extreme. It's going to be overt, in your face. I don't know exactly what they're going to stage to try to pull it off, because I don't see any of it as workable unless they got something going. I don't know about one of these New World Order giant Hail Mary plays, but that's what they're going for. It's going to be the anti-white proposition will be up your keister through your ears. It will be impossible to ignore by the time they get done. It's not going to be just no all-white football teams. It's going to be no all-white families in the formerly all-white areas of the formerly all-white countries. That's where they're going, right in front of everyone's face.
I think it's good. Keep pushing. Then it makes it really obvious. I would like this thing to speed up so it happens quickly, not over 100 years.
They're in a big hurry for some particular reason. I'm not certain the reasons, and it may be something that we have, something exogenous, and this is across the board. They've been in a huge hurry on all this stuff. I mean, no sooner than they didn't get a war in Syria a year ago, we got a group magically appears. The Sunni hardline crazy group called ISIS and ISIL and IS, don't ask me the difference. And they have magically appeared and start taking over large amounts of territory. Interesting enough, they're not Shia, they're Sunni. And then, of course, war is back on. No sooner than they don't get a war, they get one going again. And then, of course, they're in the Ukraine and everything else, making sure Putin doesn't get involved or whatever else they're doing. So they're trying to do a lot very quickly besides just white genocide. But I don't care where you go with it, even if they go off planet in some crazy scenario scheme of theirs, it'll end up being white genocide when push comes to shove in the end. That's what everyone's going to realize, because that it doesn't matter where you go in this, you always end up in this dysfunctional relationship between us and our elites, and I mean both Jew and Gentile alike, whether it be the George Wills or the Charles Krauthammers, and always this anti-white agenda of theirs. This anti-white proposition they push at all times. And post-World War II, it's just become overwhelming. It's become overwhelming.
What do you think's at the root of this unhealthy relationship with these elites, and specifically Jews?
Well, obviously they have they pledge their loyalty to an alien faith.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have loyalty to us, which is somewhat understandable. I mean, if you're sitting in a synagogue every week thinking the world's coming to get you, don't be surprised one morning if the world doesn't wake up and come and get you. You know, that they're constantly, you know, Jew, Gentile, Jew, Goyim, and that this type of thing. It's one of the psychosis of the particular, or the actual religion itself, is in the Talmud. When it comes down to, you know, part of the mystery behind white genocide is something that most people don't realize, that Kodinov Kalergi was one of the first to overtly pin this stuff. We're going to create this blended humanity in only Europe. And it's very overt. It's not even mistakable. You guys ran an article on it on Red Ice. And this was in 1925. In 1924-25, you have an Immigration Act in America. The same Immigration Act from 1965 was tried formally in 1925. And, you know, when it comes down to Jews, they owned all the papers. They owned, I wouldn't say all of them. They had tremendous media power in 1925. They didn't get anywhere. The Anglo-American elite gave one statement: if there's any changing to do, we'll be doing the changing. And it went away very quickly.
Well, let's back up and talk about the purpose of the 1924 Immigration Act. Do you know some history behind there?
I know it was to make the country non-white. The whole entire idea was to do what they did in 65 to open up the borders to, quote unquote, the third world, by and large. You know, they're always running down some particular angle. They're always running, and usually it's a little bit of first, then a lot, you know?
Yeah, I know they were trying to, there was a time there in the 20s when they were trying to preserve the ideal of the American homogeneity. And the act was limiting the number of immigrants allowed into the U.S. through a national origins quota or something. So it was targeting immigrants based on their nation of origin, not race or anything. And the act excluded all Asians, Southern and Eastern Europeans, Arabs, Indians, and Jews, because Bolshevism was also a threat. And many of these nationalities
Certain elements in the Anglo-American elite wanted to limit it to Northern European.
Yeah,
Northern
Europe. Because that was the original founding stock. So they thought that there would be more of a union and they can get more done that way. Plus, they also didn't want to compete for the foreign jobs. And as we see now, that's what's happening. Got Mexicans coming in and doing all the jobs for cheap, and everyone else doesn't have a job. And what jobs are here have gone overseas to China.
Right. Well, can you imagine someone opening up the gates to, let's say they opened up the gates in Israel and they let Lana Lochteff move in, and no sooner than she moves in, she turns around and tries to open up the gates to everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't exactly open up the gates to you to let everyone in. And you know, some of the stringent Northern European requirements, I'm not. But then again, you know, the founding stock is the founding stock. It's their country. It's their right to preserve it any way they choose. If the Germans want to do something particular to preserve German, their particular German stock and their culture, I'm totally fine with that. But they were working on an angle to open it up, any angle. And they used the Irish big time in that particular angle. And they continue to do this. You know, the Irish were discriminated against. And it's just any angle they can for white genocide, they'll angle it. But at that time, it didn't work. If there's any change, we'll be doing the changing. And post-World War II, this whole entire element, which has a great deal of power even to this day, most people don't know about it, but they're there. You know, silence, they went silent post-World War II, and silence is concurrence, and concurrence is treason. The elements that should have been saying, if there's been any change to do, we'll be doing the changing, have never said a word, ever, period. It's just full-bore white genocide. You know, most people focus on Coudenhove-Kalergi, came out of his book in 1925 because of the EU and what they're doing there now, or they focus on Barbara Lerner Specter, and I know I do an anti-racist Hitler, but there's a whole lot of questions in between. I'm not comfortable talking about the enemy in just simple words like Jew.
Sure. Or yeah, it's more complicated than that.
Broad brush, because mm-hmm. I don't trust this group at all. You know, and even when you get into Jewish mythology, they might offend some people, but their Old Testament, generally speaking, is considered mythology. But you have a relationship not between Israel and itself, but between Moses and the Israelites. So you have a basically command and control sector. You know, Moses is the big deal. The Israelites, 90% get wiped out when they exit Egypt, or 80% get wiped out when they exit Egypt. And this whole entire relationship between a group that wages war by deception is not going to reveal themselves. Our race in particular, Lana, does not do well. They don't even understand subversion. Even the pro-white elements, they don't understand that a group that wages war by deception, century after century, is never, ever going to reveal themselves to the last point.
Yeah, white people are too nice and trusting to our detriment. We become naive and complacent, always expecting the best in people, wearing our rosy-colored glasses, reading Eckhart Tolle. I mean, it's a piece of cake to take advantage of a bleeding-heart, self-hating Western liberal. We've become way too soft.
Sure. And so that's one of the challenges when you look at this group, because on one side of the equation, you have the pro-white elements will say, okay, Horace, it's just the Jews. All right, fine, but start defining that. That's just a word to me. We're dealing with some type of biological construct. Someone certainly has it in for us, because Moses wrote the Talmud. He handed down the whole entire thing orally. It wasn't the Israelites. Everything's around Moses, you know? And then, of course, who's Moses in the equation? Well, we haven't discussed that yet. And then, of course, you've got the alt-news listeners who actually get something correct. Oh, it's a group within a group, and the Jews aren't to blame, or the Jewish elite do nothing. Well, yeah, they do. Abe Foxman's carrying out orders. He's doing so lovingly, whatever those orders may be. The neocons, the Charles Krauthammers, know exactly what they're doing. They're positively evil. The Barbara Lerner Specter is positively evil. Coudenhove-Kalergi is positively evil. They're destructive elements. You know, and they know what they're doing. They're very proud of that. So don't say that they're just, you know, some false front. I believe that there's more to this group than meets the eyes. That's why I paint such a broad brush. But at the same time, they're not as simple as being tied down with one little word. Because you tie them down with one little word, time after time, this group has been run out of countries, but we're still dealing with them. And it isn't because they're magical superheroes. I mean, they basically let in a bunch of Muslims intentionally, unbeknownst to themselves, let in a bunch of Muslims who are far more anti-Semitic in Europe than the Nazis ever could be. Believe it or not, that's one thing I will tell you about growing up near Muslims, is they are far more anti-Semitic than you could ever even imagine.
Well, and that's why the news now is saying, oh, a rise in anti-Semitism in Europe. And it's like, well, yeah, it's all the Muslim population there.
The first people that told me about Adolf Hitler when I was young and Mein Kampf, because I had very blonde hair, were Muslims. Oh, have you read Mein Kampf? You know, you have blonde hair, blue eyes. Well, my eyes, I guess, are technically gray. But anyways, they didn't get into all that. Like, oh, have you read, you know who Adolf Hitler? You're Aryan. You know, this came from Muslims. It didn't come from poor whites, because they've all read that. Period. You know, so this is part of the problem. But this is, you know, the all-powerful, all-knowing group that many people think are just invincible. No, they have a particular structure. And I'm interested in the structure. And there are some wild stories. I mean, on one side, you got the David Icke's. You've got different elements that I just back off on, because I would actually like to have him on my show to ask him some very interesting questions. Some of these guys go really out there, but at the same time, I'm not comfortable pinning down the enemy underneath anything other than anti-white. I'll talk about any element that's anti-white, no holds bars, whether Jew, Gentile, whatever, and I'll label them for what they are, anti-white genocidal freaks. But at the same time, this can get pretty wild because, you know, we think in terms of, you know, the whole entire planet isn't fooled. They're not fooled. They know all, you know, okay, you know, they're waging war by deception and, you know, the Mossad, that's their motto, and they're sitting in the center of the earth. I'm like, that's only part of the equation. You know, we've got a serious problem with treason at the top of Western civilization. And if you think some elements, certain elements, certain wealthy families are going to sit around and just bend over backwards for fear of the Jews and let one small element push white genocide post-World War II when they didn't at all allow them to touch anything in 1925 just because of someone got on a train to Auschwitz or something, you're in dreamland. You're in dreamland. Doesn't work that way. You know, this is a very broad treason, in my opinion. Very broad. And it needs to be looked at from that perspective. And I don't care. Barbara Lerner Specter will probably end up being on the front cover of the book for white genocide if it were written right now. Codenhove Clergy will get a chapter, but there's a lot of other anti-white traitors that we don't even know about.
Yeah, she was addressing a Jewish audience, I believe, and I think she messed that one up. She didn't realize how that was going to leak out online.
Well, no, they didn't. She didn't think the mic was on.
Ah.
She didn't know the cameras were rolling. Yeah, you couldn't. We couldn't write anything that evil for even anti-racist Hitler to say. We just said, okay. There's Miss Specter, because that's evil stuff. Laughing and gaggling, talking about wiping out children is pretty evil. No matter who the children are, but it's pretty evil. But we're the only ones that are supposed to deal with this. And if you say anything about it, it's anti-Semitism or so on. Bullshit. We'll talk about it.
Well, I think it's interesting as whites start to wake up to this agenda, we're going to have a survival instinct kick in because we don't have that right now. Because once that kicks in, I think things will get really interesting.
Whites don't take any other group seriously, but whites. Whites will rise up in total indignation of the Lana Lochtefs when she talks about something that's taboo or against the Tim Murdochs. But they don't treat other groups really seriously. Whites kind of think in terms of only competing with other whites, this type of thing. But what typically happens is we're going to do a 180. And they're going to realize that what they thought was a universal, because they're universal thinkers, whites are universal thinkers, is not actually universal. That this elite that is by and large looks like us and has no loyalty to us, whatever you want to label on them, I label them anti-white, and I'm talking about simply the white elites. Forget about the mulatto stooges and all that other kind of stuff. Forget about the non-whites. They're there because someone white wants them there, Jew, Gentile, like whatever. But once they become aware that this, what they've been presented as a bill of universal goods is not universal, there will be a tremendous outrage, and we want the broadest discovery possible of the parties behind this, because there's a lot of, you know, we got Codenhove Clergy and we got Barbara Lerner Specter, but a lot of other groups have been silent for a long, long time. I mean, there's no end to this stuff, actually.
Do you think it's time to start our own watch groups, or our white hate watch groups? And our white voting caucus? What do you think?
Well, there's a couple pro-white forums that put up these threads called Pink Rabbit Watch, and they'll put up face of anti-whites with their quotes. And there's a lot of this stuff going around on Twitter, so I'm all for anything that calls out the anti-whites, period. Because at this day and time, you can't really say anything without it coming back to haunt you, so you better watch what you say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but a lot of them, you know, it's just treason. Treason has totally been accepted as a norm in this society, and a society that accepts traitors as heroes is no longer a society. I mean, on one end, they're trying to destroy our country. On the other end, they send militaries to destroy everyone else's.
Yeah.
You know, it's just totally, it's Orwellian. It's beyond, it's like a chapter that Orwell would write.
People are such chickens. I'm always like, why can't we have a huge, massive tax revolt where millions of us just say we are not paying for this crap? But people are such chickens, they won't do it.
It takes a whole lot to get white people upset. They're usually calm as cats or running around very, it's one extreme or the other. It's by and large, the reaction you saw to the war on whites among your audience is the reaction among the greater white population. It's one extreme or the other. They're calm as cats or they're outraged.
Yeah, and they're outraged in defending every other race but their own, I notice.
Right. You know, the only thing you have to do is, I always say, when the water's polluted, you go back to the source. And the whole idea of going back to the source is to draw fresh water. And the only thing you have to do is go back into the original programming where they could no longer defend themselves for being white. And when called a racist, you just say, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Have something to say. It's no explanation. Someone's calling you names. They don't want to discuss anything. That's unacceptable behavior in a society. Psychological warfare should not be the mainstay of the elites trying to run the place. When it is, you got problems. You got big problems because it's not going to work. Sooner or later, someone's going to know what it is and they're going to stitch you up. Especially in the they're always creating these closed systems. You know, we got a workers' paradise. where they murder people when they try to leave. You got, you know, you've got diversity and multiculturalism is your strength, but only in white countries. Everywhere else, it's pretty much, you know, no one wants it, and that's okay. You know, this stuff can work as long as you know what it is and what it isn't, and started exposing it.
So why is education not working when you talk to white people and point out things in history?
This is a basic, this is a fundamental of propaganda. It takes 15 to 20 years to brainwash a nation. That's how long it takes to put a nation, a group of people under one system, under new textbooks, let's say, under a new media. It takes 15 to 20 years to undo that process. There's two ways in the history of the world to undo brainwashing or to introduce brainwashing. Is one, a radical change of media at the top, or two, a radical change in communications at the bottom, the printing press and the internet. In fact, if you want to see how the basics work, and battles are all won and lost in propaganda on understanding the basics, but this is a fundamental basic. It will never change because at, you know, 20 years, you're a young adult, and whatever you've been fed, well, that's your diet, you know, and that's what you're going to end up with. And so if you go back, I always say 1995 was a key year in my mind because most listeners would remember the World Wide Web on AOL.com. And that's kind of when things started picking up. So where are we at now, Lana? We're in 2014, 2015. So if you look at where, let's say, White Rabbit Radio came out and we started introducing memes, heavily seeding memes like anti-white and white genocide, 2009, 2010, we're right on time. So now education is going to start working because people, certain outlets are going to start having legitimate discussions, but you have to be able to turn it off and on between someone like me and you are having a discussion here. You're not calling names. I'm not calling names. We're having a discussion, and Facebook where they're calling names, you know, we've kind of got both things going on. But if you understand this, there's a certain percentage of this population we're stuck with, but here's the funny thing. The system is basically bent on these people they're stuck with enforcing the system. They can't change. Even when it comes like to the Bill O'Reillys, they can't, even the most educated that are brainwashed cannot change. You know, in the Soviet Union, you could take people to concentration camps. This was proven over and over again by dominant Soviet propagandists and even Hollywood stars. They would refuse to believe that they were actual concentration camps. They didn't understand anything until the big boot kicks them right in the tail. Everything has to come down. At this point, this people that we were stuck with that are constantly yelling racist, they're constantly yelling anti-Semite, they're constantly yelling white supremacist, actually start destroying the system for us. Because what's happening, and if you know anything about any of the science behind sound, it sounds rather radical, but there's a whole entire science, science behind sound and sound being vibration. You know, opera singers break wine glasses. They break wine glasses without ever touching them. Because once they hit the right frequency, all they have to do is raise the volume. Everything in the universe has a frequency at which it's going to vibrate, and it can be destroyed. The system we're in is very similar to a wine glass. It can be destroyed once you find what I call the keystone to the pyramid, what they're really going for, what is really taboo, what will really provoke that reaction you're looking for, either one way or another. And the way you start the whole entire process is go back into the beginning and start introducing memes where they can start undoing things.
So when do you think education can work?
Right now. Right now, certain segments of the Red Ice population and many other segments want to be educated. They're starting to read more and more. which is why anti-Semitism is going to explode. It's why anti-Zionism is exploding. But of course, you have to be under new medium for 15 to 20 years. And this is a radical new medium. No one even knows what to do with it. No one knows what to do with the internet other than to shut it down. But the parties that want to shut it down haven't been able to shut it down, have they? Anymore mm-hmm. they've been able to get their war going.
Yeah.
Maybe something else is in control. I don't know. Maybe the universe is trying to talk to the dear little pink rabbits and tell them their time is near up. Sooner or later, you're pushing on a string, you know.
I'd also like to see a lot of the pro-whites out there starting to have lots of kids and homeschooling them and teaching them to have some self-worth and shielding them from the anti-white lessons they're learning in school. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, there's a ton out there. I know some that have huge, massive families, more and more out there. There's one extreme or the other in pro-whites. Either you have former professionals that have come in for whatever reason, that or children's wife, spouses have died. You have some very tragic stories in pro-whites, or and they don't have children for a variety of different reasons, or maybe they've raised nephews or nieces or kid brothers or sisters. Let's face it, the family structure in Western civilization has been destroyed. And then you have another extreme that I know in pro-whites, and many of them don't do radio shows and stuff like that, that have massive families. They're busy working to pay for them and every other free grafter on the tree, you know. Because not only do you have to pay for your family, but of course, if you look at the tax rate and everything else, America is not family friendly.
No, it's not. Mm-mm.
So it becomes very difficult if you have to buy your own insurance or you're a small business owner. But many of them do quite well. They just get out there and they start having kids. But, you know, there's usually one extreme or the other. And it's, you know, and things go through a process. We'll have all the white kids you have you can handle if you start solving white genocide. In fact, I always say if anyone, the enemy, you see, white genocide has to exist everywhere. The anti-white proposition has to exist everywhere because no, it's like the Soviet Union. They have to basically conquer the planet or fail. That's really what this comes down to. As soon as someone breaks out of the box, as soon as someone's ready to break out the box, and this is the danger, whites will all move there. If Australia all of a sudden changed, did a 180-degree turn, which will probably never happen because their elites are beholden to the Anglo apparatus. With that being said, if they ever did a 180-degree turn, everyone's going to move there. Even the whites that say they won't will. That's the problem. You have way less than 10% of the population spread out over the whole top of the planet. All of Russia, all of New Zealand, Australia, North America, elements of South America, and I'm talking about North America, not only America, Canada, all of Europe, Ireland, UK, Iceland, 10% of the population is holding it down with nuclear weapons pointing at everyone else. We have vast majority of the resources, vast majority of the technology, technological innovation we're behind. It doesn't matter whether you want to talk about German manufacturing or whatever, but it becomes really ridiculous. But yet at the same time, we don't have a home. We don't have, I mean, no one has ever heard a white politician say, you know, I like my white kids. I think I'll keep them that way. It's always the direct opposite.
Yeah.
So that the big problem will be the direct opposite, you know, but that'll happen in time. You know, I know there's people out there, young college kids that would love to get married. You know, they're in a relationship. They would love to get married and it's nearly impossible because they can't find jobs. You know, Russia. I know Russia has done some things to try to be more family friendly, but this is a larger crisis. You know, if you have a group that does not have a morality that includes our own existence, well, then you're going to have some challenges. And this is part of white genocide. You know, at one time in America, there was very massive families. Most of us descend from people that had massive families at one time.
Yeah, because half of them would die. You know, I had a great grandmother who had like 12 kids and several of them died. So,
well, I have one of the similar situation we all lived. It just depends. But my point is the elite basically came in post-World War II and said, okay, we don't want this many. We want to be more environmentally conscious. And they gave several different excuses. We want to reduce the family size down to two people. They actually did this in America. And I don't know exactly what their process was in Europe, but they wanted to reduce the family size. And then no sooner than they reduced the family size, they said, we don't have enough workers. We need to start importing immigrants. You see how they run that racket?
Mm-hmm.
So until you deal with white genocide, I think it's wonderful if you have 12 kids. If you can't afford that, I'm not on your back either. But once this is solved, once you solve white genocide, once you understand the anti-white proposition, you're going to understand why there aren't.
Otherwise, what if I decided to have six kids, but then they became self-hating anti-whites and turned their back on their European heritage? What good does that really do? My kids won't, of course.
Well, they don't have a home. There's no one to support their culture or race or anything else. Even those there is no home for whites on this planet. There's no country on this planet led by anyone that couldn't fall under the label anti-white very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually dangerous for them. Because when this turns, it'll be a lot of indignation with what's been given away. Basically the average white person is supporting everything but themselves financially.
Oh yeah.
And that's just the way it works. But, you know, this is all. So when you start talking about family size in America, that was reduced intentionally, in my opinion, so they could import immigrants. Again, it's problem, reaction, solution. So you're always trying to get around white genocide by having a large number of kids, which is great. But that's not the problem to begin with. The problem to begin with is you have elites that are constantly engineering situations that go toward the anti-white proposition. You see this over and over again.
Yeah.
That's what they're going for. They're not. It's kind of like the Civil Rights Act had something to do with helping blacks. No, it didn't. It didn't help about them at all. It's all about white genocide. You know, I mean, if it were about, since when did they ever help out blacks in Africa?
Well, Southerners were talking about that during the Civil Rights era, actually. They brought up some of those early terms and ideas of white genocide, and people were scoffing at them.
A good friend of mine, he got his file from the FBI. When he, I think it was age 15 at the local high school, when he's saying desegregation was the first step toward white genocide. And it was. And hindsight vision is not only 2020, it was the truth. And that's Bob Whitaker, the one that wrote the white wrote many of these memes out there. And that is the truth. I mean, it made it sound funny then, because at the time then they said desegregation has nothing to do with intermarriage. That's what they were saying at the time, which was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, they said it has nothing to do with mixed neighborhoods or anything else like that. They were saying this was the line. It's a slippery slope, and they want to walk down the slippery slope.
Have you seen the black and white footage of school integration in the South, which was done by gunpoint? Yeah, let's just force it with guns instead of letting it unfold organically. I have to say that most of the photos, such as the Little Rock 9, felt staged to me. Yeah, those evil white teenage girls.
Propaganda. It's all propaganda. If you look at Africans now, these people that support that say they care for Africans in America have been destroyed. I mean, most people don't understand how destroyed. 50 years from now, there probably will not be any Africans in America in the conventional sense that we have now. They'll either be half Mexican or half white, but they're not going to be. The Africans in America will be from Africa, out of Nigeria or something like that. They won't be the actual original racial African stock in America from 1965 will be non-existent. They're either, I mean, the males are all in jail. If you go back to prior to the Civil Rights Act, they had a family structure. I mean, they couldn't drink out of a fountain with white people, but, you know, there's a lot of white anti-whites I wouldn't drink out of a fountain with anyways. You know, but at the same time, they had their own schools. They weren't doing as bad as most people think. Yeah, they couldn't walk into white communities. They couldn't do a lot of different things like that, but they weren't destroyed.
I just have to interject here about the separate water fountains and the bathrooms. A lot of this was about diseases, not to mention the cultural differences of the proper way to use a toilet or a water fountain. It was a different time, and there was a lot going on behind the scenes that led up to Jim Crow.
Oh, yeah. There was all kinds of different propaganda behind this. But this goes back into the famous black nationalist. Marcus Garvey was, you know, the famous one, the first African national socialist. That's what he called himself, basically, a black national socialist and Garveyism. But, you know, he was talking about this stuff way back, and he died in 1940, and he was talking about it back when it way before the back to Africa type thing. He started the White Star Lines, or not White Star Lines, or black. He was kind of like the Donald Trump of African nationalists. And certain powers that be in America, overtly Jewish in this instance, went out of their way to destroy this guy. And he was, you know, was gung-ho about taking them back to Africa because, of course, you have Liberia. Liberia right. has the capital being Monroe after President Monroe.
Repatriation happened there?
That's correct. If dealing with this situation once and for all, because Garvey thought, in many of his writings, from what I've read, that they would not have a future here, and they haven't. All they've done has been used for white genocide, pawns in the game of white genocide. I'm not saying some African, some NBA players don't have it good, and I'm not saying some news anchors don't have it good or some in Hollywood, but if you look at the numbers and look at the numbers now compared to when Garvey died in 1940, you'll realize that the change hasn't been all that good for a lot of them. It's all a lot of smoke and mirrors. They've been annihilated by these social engineering policies that I label the anti-white proposition and white genocide. Yeah, of course, they can date, or supposedly they can date someone on any given day. They can run around and commit a whole lot of crime and stuff like that and end up in jail indefinitely. But by and large, when you look at the numbers, they've been annihilated. So I would say the Marcus Garveys had it right from to begin with. And so did the Bob Whitakers. That this is a complete scam. It was a complete scam. But the powers that be in the English-speaking world are always running scams. You know, and Garvey was one, you know, there's rare, I don't even know that there's actually been too many legitimate black nationalists writing actual biographies of Marcus Garvey. Because to write one and to get it through, let's say to get it into a movie in Hollywood, you can't be honest in it, because his fight was basically with Zionist elements and with Jewish elements, overtly Jewish elements. I mean, it basically became a black Jewish thing with Marcus Garvey. And why they won't, why they're trying to undermine his bond issues, or why they're trying to undermine his particular activism of getting them out of here once and for all, you know, and going about their business, you know, black self-sufficiency and that type of thing. And it becomes rather scandalous. They don't want to talk about it, you know.
Well, if we back up just for a second, you were talking about, you know, Europeans don't have a morality that includes our own existence. Did we before? What happened to it?
Oh, two discussions. One would be in the big three religions, the Yahwist religions, post-Rome. But even then, there are some that would just blame Christianity. Even then, we have another dynamic. Whereas, you know, it's almost, there's plenty of places on the planet that were very big white powerhouses in ancient times that are no longer white powerhouses. They're brown powerhouses. You know, whites are in a peculiar position in nature. You know, we have somewhat of an eternal dialogue. And if they don't think life is worth living or whatever, anyone white can actually commit suicide. You know, typically when someone doesn't think life is worth living, they typically jump off a cliff or whatever. In a white cases, they can commit racial suicide. They can pretty much disappear. In a given generation or two, when you look at ancient India, or you look at some of these different paradigms, let's say ancient Persia or certain elements in Persia, when you look at different trends that are just overarching, where there aren't the traditional enemies that people like to blame, or this is because of Christianity, this is because of the Judaizers, there's a larger pattern in place. And this goes back to the Kennewick Mans. This goes back to what the elites don't want to talk about in ancient white migrations and what exactly is going on. But it goes back to maybe we're in the wrong part of the universe. I don't actually have the answer. I can only try to start a discussion. There's some genius that's going to have an answer, but it's larger than just Christianity. Because at one time, Christianity was very much a white faith, but at the same time, it's become extremely degenerate. Even Christians know that. And very much anti-white. But so did Hinduism.
Yeah.
You know, this is the whole entire paradigm. Are we falling into some larger cycle? The one way to do something about it is to don't blame others. Let's look inward and let's have a larger discussion, even though there's a lot of legitimate blame to go around, especially when it comes down to traitors. Because if a group has an alien loyalty, they're just acting out their alien loyalty. You can't really blame them. If a group is only out for themselves, and typically on this planet, this is how it works. If you got a black country or an Asian country, you're worried about your own tribe, your own country. That's what a nation is. It's a tribe with a border first, and then you worry about the rest of the world. In white countries, that doesn't exist. We just worry about the rest of the world, and we're just non-entities. We're little magical entities that are supposed to just be expendable at every breath, every tax dollar, and everything else like that. So it becomes kind of interesting, fascinating.
Well, that
fascinating
kind of
discussion
kind of reminds me of one of your programs that you did, where you're talking about the mortality versus immortality. So Jews are maybe more mortal, whereas Europeans, we believe in life after death, and it's going
well,
to
if you
keep
look
going.
At the belief structure of the, let's say Talmudism, some of our listeners would call it Atonism, which is very controversial. We don't want to touch that yet. But Talmudism, you're dealing with our polar opposite. So a lot of times the way you want to find out about whites is by looking at your polar opposite. Our enemy is consumed with mortality. There are museums on every corner. They always say the Muslims are consumed by death. Well, I've never been into a Muslim museum devoted to their dead. There's another group that puts museums devoted to dead Jews on every single street corner all over the universe, if allowed. So they're consumed with mortality. Our race is the polar opposite. We have no awareness of mortality at all. Our race is the only race that has to be awakened. Dr. David Duke, who actually has a PhD in history, of all things, on anti-Semitism and things like that. Most people don't know that, but and he is quite the historian if you ever had a chance to talk with him. But you know, he had to awaken. He has a book called The Awakening. If someone like that has to awaken, what does it say for the average white person? And one of the drills I do, and I'm not prepared to do it today because I don't have the material in front of me that we would do on any third show, is I'll go into, and I do it allegorically by talking about white rabbits. We'll talk about white rabbit adoptions. And we'll talk about the blind spot. You see, if you have a blind spot, and if you have something that you're not aware of that is a blind spot, it's a weak spot, and everyone has a weak spot, well, you don't need Jews or crazy Christians around or traitors to take advantage of it. There's always going to be someone to take advantage of it. Kennewick Man's dead. The Canary Islands, the whites there are dead. Someone took advantage of something. And we do have a blind spot that's easily taken advantage of by our elites or anyone else looking at it. And we can do that on another show. It's about a 10 to 15 minute drill, and it would be, well, rather unnerving for most of the audience. It's one of the most unnerving drills I do.
We'll have to plan for that one.
You would have to guess what the white rabbit's adopting. It sounds easy, but it ain't. We have a blind spot. We have a blind spot, and we have no awareness of mortality at all. That's why we'll go to the moon. That's why we'll try to go to Mars. That's why we'll you're dealing with a race that will not only invent flight, they will make flight safety, and then they'll learn how to fly safely. They will teach all the other rabbits to learn how to fly, and animals without wings do not attempt flight in nature. No one attempts to fly in nature if you don't have wings. It's a crazy act, but only white rabbits will do it. We'll make it safe, and then once we're in the air, we'll do something radically crazy. We'll invent a safe way to jump out of the plane, parachute. It doesn't make any sense in nature to have an animal like this. We do some crazy stuff. But one of the reasons we do it is we have no awareness of mortality, which actually becomes quite dangerous. It's one of what was one of the dangerous things in, let's say, National Socialism, that once they stop thinking in terms of mortality, they stop thinking in terms of a closed system or beginnings and endings. Because if you have a beginning or you have an ending, you have a closed system, basically. If you look in Hinduism, it's not a traditional religion. It doesn't have beginnings or endings. It's just one giant cycle. And so our race naturally responds to that type of thinking. They start becoming extremely dangerous. Not in the Old Testament sense of the term, we're going to conquer everyone, we're going to wipe them out. But they start thinking, well, and this came out after National Socialism and some of the different environmental groups. Well, you know, they're really quite unhappy, so let's just get rid of them. We're not killing them because they can't die. You know, there's no beginning or ending, so there's no death. We're just going to put them in another world where they can no longer harm others. You know, this starts being this rationalization that can happen, which is quite dangerous when whites start doing it. That's, in my opinion, one of the big fears of the enemy is when we start doing this type of stuff, and you see this coming down the environmental sectors. They stop believing in beginnings and endings. They start becoming aware that we have no awareness of mortality and how to use that in some type of, well, plans, good, bad, diabolical. You start creating actually killing machines. The way the whites, most of the pro-whites think they're going to go about, you know, defending white nations is not the way to really go about it. It's the direct opposite, because what they're trying to do is respond to a programming and stimuli that the enemy uses. Well, the enemy doesn't really know us all that well, in my opinion. They only know our blind spot.
Tim, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. I've really appreciated it.
I appreciate the talk.
As we wrap up, please remind us of all your details and your websites.
WhiteRabbitRadio.net, of course. HoraceTheAvenger.com.net.org. I have all the Horace the Avengers, but you can always find us at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. And, of course, on Twitter, we're the @EuroRabbit. And, of course, email HoraceTheWhiteRabbit@gmail.com. We're working on animations presently, working on Johnny Racist, which is a series. And we're working on bringing out our main asset, which you'll get the first look of probably in the next couple weeks, which is the 3D rabbits, which is a totally different deal than anything we've ever touched before. You'll get a first look at one of these little guys. And we're all about introducing memes such as anti-white, white genocide, and provoking a larger discussion on these issues, which are inherently pro-white. Not anti-anything else, just pro-white.
Love it. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you.
Everyone, if you haven't yet, definitely check out White Rabbit Radio TV on YouTube while it's still there. to watch Tim's hilarious animated productions. They're top quality and highly enjoyable yet educational. And if you haven't listened to White Rabbit Radio yet, I'd encourage you to have a listen. Tim is no stranger to forbidden archaeology, history, and otherworldly theories in addition to politics. It's true what Tim said. It's easier to be anti-something than pro-something. It takes less energy to be destructive and negative as opposed to being pro-something, because that requires work and energy to build something up and to keep it maintained. Today, even noticing racial differences is officially on the anti-list. It's the easy way out on the path of least resistance, but start being pro-white or pro-racial differences, because really, that's supporting true diversity. Look out, you'll feel the weight of the anti-racists or maybe even Antifa, and we all know how violent they are. So why would some prefer we talk about aliens but avoid the subject of race? Why the fear in discussing what nature made? Because to me, race is metaphysical. The formation of different biological expressions is miraculous. Racial differences are the manifestations of the spiritual expressed in physical form. Racial awareness is spiritual to me. It's mysticism when you combine the knowledge of one's family lineage as well as a spiritual effort to delve into your people's primordial and mythical times. Race is a profound force manifesting itself in the realm of the body, but also in the realm of the spirit. It's biological, but also metaphysical. You are a part of all those who have gone before you in your line. We are the carriers of a heritage that has been transmitted to us and that we need to transmit. And in this spirit, it is something going beyond time. That is why culture and mythology to each race, to each ethnicity, is a sacred, vital aspect of humanity and always will be. We're not talking about just skin color. We're talking about the collective soul of a people that has been created over thousands of years. Race is not just biological. It can be likened to a collective organism that shares a consciousness as well as psychological and cultural aspects. Each race possesses a racial soul that is unique to our genetics. Race cannot be just the subject of biologists, but also of paleontologists, psychoanthropologists, and mystics. So of course we should be exploring this issue. After all, we are tied to the earth. We are flesh and part of nature, and nature is mystical. I reject the idea that life is just a virtual reality, a quick stop to have a whimsical experience. That's taking the easy escapist anti-earth and anti-human route. Now, really getting into the thick of humanity and really living it, being pro-earth existence, that's taking the high road. If you want to get in touch with me, visit radio314.com, where you'll find links to my Facebook, Google+, Twitter, Stitcher, etc. I can't keep up anymore. That's it for now, and I hope that you enjoy your day. We'll talk again soon.
I saw you die. In my arms, your breath, your final breath. A deep-drawn sigh, you closed your eyes. So far away, deep in the night, I couldn't run forevermore. Time always met me again and again, to hear my words, for they were lost.